Welcome to Food and Loathing, where we believe that while you may not be able to teach an old dog new tricks, you can always teach a mature booze hound how to make a better cocktail.
I'm in. Let's do this.
I'm your host, Al Mancini, and I am here today with two other people who have been known to mix a drink or two in their day at the Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits Academy, one of Las Vegas's finest resources for learning about intoxicating beverages. Here with me, fresh back from the beaches of Mexico, offthestrip.com food and beverage writer Samantha Gemini Stevens. Welcome back again, Gemini.
Thank you.
Another airline fiasco for you this time. I'm not flying with you.
No, I know. Everybody's been saying that. I love Southwest. You know, shout out to the people who are actually working for them. But the weather in Houston took a bit of a turn yesterday. We ended up flying over some of the tornado damage that landed us in Corpus Christi. But I learned that Corpus Christi has no customs. Mm-hmm. So when you're coming back into the country, you can't get off the plane till you go through customs.
But you weren't planning to stop at Corpus Christi.
No, they diverted us because of the tornadoes. But I was supposed to go through Houston.
Right, but so... Long story short, we sat on the tarmac for a few hours.
They gave us water. Nobody revolted. We eventually got to Houston. I'm home.
Okay, well, welcome back. And also joining us in person once again, probably because he heard they have alcohol. The man who makes sure the sound waves make it out of our pie holes and into your earbuds. The little engineer who can and does. The one and only Rich Johnson.
The extent of my mixology is, you know, Mac 12 neat soda back.
At least you take it neat. I respect.
I was going to say, at least the soda is back.
Yes.
As I mentioned, we're here at the Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits Academy, and we're going to be speaking to a pair of their instructors in just a few minutes to hopefully get some tips on mixing drinks or learn a little bit of trivia that we didn't know, but also tell you how you can take advantage of the returning educational series absolutely free for a few months.
And ooh, I can afford that.
Yeah, this is aimed at people in the industry, but I don't think they check IDs. I mean, they check the 21. We'll find out.
Yeah.
I think you could sign up.
I like this idea.
So we're going to have some dirt for you on that really soon. But first, we always begin the festivities talking about where we've dined recently because we eat out a lot and we like to brag. And also because we're all trying to figure out how to get our accountants to write off a few of these checks on our taxes.
True story.
Rich. Yeah. You haven't shared in a while because not been around. Let's start with you, man.
It's both pride and shame. I must say I finally got to Brezza.
Yes.
Woo. Nicole's place over there at Resorts World. A fantastic meal made even better by the visit from Chef Nicole, who brought an extra pasta course, which was very nice. A tough time remembering all the specifics because it's been a while. The whole branzino for Joanna, the half a chicken for me. Pastas were fantastic. And then I went to look at the menu before we showed up, and I thought, was it that one? And that's not a testament of the...
No, they're all just
wonderful.
So good.
I just have no memory or palate. I do remember a fantastic Caesar salad, clearly made in-house, with anchovy in the dressing as Caesar Cardini originally made it in Tijuana back in the 20s. None of this fishies on the top.
I'm just saying, I just saw the menu, man, and you better make sure you can remember what you ate there because that had bad consequences when the guy could not remember in the menu.
Oh, no.
Nobody else watched that. Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
No. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I loved it so much, I watched it twice.
Yeah. Now, we went. I still can't bring myself to watch that, but I have to say,
just for the hell of it, I know I always interrupt and we're, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But the menu is fantastic, and I think it takes the preachiness out of the topics that are covered in the Bear.
Absolutely.
In a preachy manner and makes them a lot more fun.
Oh,
so that's
so
all
great.
I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So we ended up at Brezza early, very few folks in there at first, but then by the time we left around 7, it was getting filled. And I have to say, not against Brezza, but sort of against our original choice, which was Viva. Mm-hmm. And we never really got there because I could not get beyond the dueling music.
Oh.
You have the outside music of Resorts World.
Yeah.
You have Viva's own music. And they put us in two different places, one sort of out in the terrace area and one deeper in the bar. And both times, it was just this cacophony of chaos of the two musics at about equal volume to my brain. And I just couldn't do it. So we found the quiet of Brezza.
There's some sound engineers over there.
Yeah. It was, no disrespect to Viva, which I will try
not
one of these
all.
Days. But that was that. Or also this week, I went to Bacon Nation. I'd been there on day 2 when it was still kind of chaos. looks like they have their act together now. I had some great wings and jalapeno poppers, huge poppers, peppers, filled with light cheddary cream cheese. My dining companion had a cheeseburger topped with, guess what, bacon. A very thick bacon. Not quite pork belly, but certainly thicker than, you know, the bar-esque thick cut at Albertsons. Last weekend was a double-dip breakfast for me. Saturday at Dupar's. Monster omelet. I did not have bacon and eggs over medium.
Oh, my God. You switched it.
I know.
Oh,
I did.
Oh, my God.
I had about
dog, new trick.
Four veggies inside the omelet and three huge sausages on the side. I did try to minimize my carbs, so I reluctantly passed on the wonderful hash browns of Dupar's and just had the toast that's over there at the Suncoast.
I love Dupar's. I think they're a good restaurant. I do not think their pancakes are as brilliant as everybody else thinks they are. They're like fucking pancakes.
Yeah, the way I avoid that is don't have the pancakes.
Yeah, I've decided years ago.
I love that.
I still take people over there for breakfast, but I just I don't order pancakes.
Yeah. I haven't ordered a pancake anywhere in years. I really every time I tried to order them and I was like, oh, put some Butterfingers in it. That'll make
you know
what? I'll just buy a fucking Butterfinger.
Right.
I don't like pancakes.
If I want starch, I'm going to have the good hash browns. Okay, next. Next day, Sunday, Rampart next door, the light senior loyalty breakfast of two eggs, two slices of thin bacon this time, toast over medium, and a side of victory.
Yes,
about
baby.
$60 to the good on the video poker there. Mm-hmm. The cold days of this past week demanded another beef stew at home, more of the same there. Cool. It's something I haven't done for a while, paella, or at least I tried again to make paella. It was more patient than ever, but I still could not get the good socrat, the crust
the
on the bottom. It was dark old. I have a paella pan. I had gas. I had everything. Mm-hmm. And I was patient, and I was afraid I was burning it, and then I just got hungry and said, screw it.
Yeah, that's it. I just got hungry. I think I've said this before. I just got no good food story starts with, I just got hungry and said, screw it.
It was still very good. I've become a Josh believer. Josh, and it's a Oregon Pinot, was a perfect pairing there for me and my unsophisticated palate.
I've got some paella seasoning that was given to me by the Spanish Pavilion that I'll bring you.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah.
At Fancy Foods. Gemini, where you been? I know you had another adventure and all that, but any place in Vegas that you've eaten since we last spoke at the Fancy
Food Show? Not really, no, because I left really early Thursday morning and was working on other things. As I've mentioned ad nauseum, I've been working on dry January stuff for Off the Strip. So I've been going out and drinking a lot of stuff with no alcohol in it. I didn't say I've been the perfect participant because I can see Al making a face at me right now.
Yeah, she's the only person I know who's drunk when she writes her dry January stories. Now, that's not true. I'm not accusing you of
rape. No. It's okay. Not drunk, but not exactly completely dry.
We're laughing.
Sadly, unfortunately, not a whole lot of Vegas stuff to share. I did just have what I thought were actually some pretty tasty shumai just down the street. I met up with Rich before the show.
I don't even remember the name of the place.
But I know. I'll look it up.
But tasty shumai spot.
They were bigger than any shumai I've ever seen. Like, I'm used to the teeny tiny ones. You know, maybe they're, you know, I don't know, half an inch across, three quarters of an inch across. These things were an inch and a half across, minimum.
They were not from the freezer.
No, they were not from the freezer. They were stuffed full of really good, like, chicken and shrimp and pork or something like that. And the thing I mentioned to Rich that I thought was interesting, they had a super black peppery thing going for them, and I didn't hate it. Like, the sauce was very sort of Asian Thai style dipping sauce, but both on the dumpling and a little bit in the sauce, there was a very much an effort of black pepper being put into this, and it was really enjoyable. I liked it.
If only we could tell people where that was.
I know.
So they could eat
I think it's called Thai Table or something. It's down by the Lucky's Bar, just down a mile down the road
Jones,
from here.
Yeah,
cool.
So yeah, pop in, check it out. It was really quiet. They've got lunch specials. That was the only thing that I tasted. But yeah, I was just really surprised by the black pepper and really enjoyed it.
Cool. Sorry I missed that. Okay, so where have I been? If you recall, we recently had Michael Mina on the show.
Yeah.
And he was telling us about the renovations and menu expansion at Strip Steak. That was about 2 weeks ago. Go back and listen to it if you haven't heard it. But last week, Chef Mina had a few members of the media in to sample some of the dishes in the new private dining room. And damn.
Just damn.
How good. brought back a lot of great memories because I used to spend a lot of time in Mandalay Bay. And it just reminds me that I need to go back there. And I think we're going to have a lot more reasons to go back to Mandalay Bay.
Do tell.
Because the president of Mandalay was speaking to all of us as we were assembled, you know,
yeah.
the big giant Jesus Last Supper table.
Yeah. Yep.
And he said, you're food writers, you're going to have a lot to write about in Mandalay Bay over the next year. He's like, I expect we're going to have Mandalay Bay announcements going out about once a month.
Oh, my gosh.
He wouldn't tell us what's coming next, but so that's good news for because I used to have so much fun at that place.
Yeah, I love that place.
Yeah, when I got into food writing, I was always covering bands at House of Blues, but I was spending all my time with Hubert Keller, with Rick Moonen, with Mike at Border Grill.
Yep.
I mean, it was so I'm glad that they're going to bring back, you know, that they're really excited.
I am excited, yeah.
As far as strip steak, of course, the duck fat fries were great. This new truffle cornbread and the yuzu jelly donut with caviar. Both a lot of fun, great dishes. They had a lot of what I would call new style sushi, new style sashimi. If you remember, that was sort of a trend maybe 10, 15 years ago. But like they have a crispy yellowfin tuna nigiri, the hamachi nori tacos. I don't know. I almost feel like I may have spoken about this in the past. So I won't go on too much. But it was just a fantastic meal. It makes me want to spend more time at Mandalay
Bay.
Absolutely.
We
also went back to Nene Japanese Bistro over
I
on like Grand
pictures.
Canyon. That's over by the, like where the Rolling Smoke and the Frankenfinas are, the LVC, you know, the gyms across Grand Canyon there. I really love this place. And one of the things I really dig about it personally are the reasonable prices that you'll find on some very high-end ingredients. Now, look, if you don't know what the following words mean, that's okay, because you usually only see these items at very expensive restaurants. And you, the person who doesn't know these words, you're still going to find shit that you like at this place. I still want you to go there. But as they say, if you know, you know.
Such and a ringing endorsement. Shit you'll like.
No, there's no the great stuff. No, there's great stuff
right
that everybody will like.
Absolutely.
There is absolutely great
Here's
stuff.
Here's what I tell people. You may not know what it means now, but taste it, eat it, try it. You're going to know what it means then, and you're all set. So let's go.
But as I was saying, if you know, you know. So for those who know, you'll also know what these price points that I'm talking about mean, and they're pretty fucking awesome. Otoro, $4.50 a piece. Chutoro nigiri, $3.50 a piece. Three different styles of tobiko. They've got the plain one, the one that's marinated in yuzu, and the wasabi tobiko.
Yeah.
Those are $1.50 a piece. You
oh
can't even
God.
Get tobiko at half the
no.
neighborhood sushi restaurants I know. Kamishita, which is a really, really fatty cut of tuna, that's $5.50 a piece. Again, if those words resonate, those prices should also resonate with you. I don't have to say much more.
I think I've got dinner sorted.
And to be able to get things in the burbs like that,
exactly.
to quote MasterCard, that's priceless, baby. I had a short business meeting at the bar at Villa Azure in the Palazzo. You may recall I missed the media night because I was sick, but Rick Moonen was there, and he had said that they were still trying to dial in some details, but he looked forward to going back. I had a few bites at the bar that were all great, but the one thing I was happy to learn is they've gotten rid of the DJ, and they now have live music.
Yay.
The night I was there, it was the woman who had starred in Bat Out of Hell, which I don't think is running anymore, or it's not going to be running much longer. She was performing the kind of modern jazz interpretations of contemporary classics that are all the rage right now in supper clubs in Las Vegas. I like it. I want to get back for a full meal, so I'm psyched.
I have a semi-update of Jim and I and our lunch. I found it on the Google Maps. I found the group, but apparently the Thai restaurant was too cheap to buy a listing in Google Maps. So we got Soho Japanese Restaurant, Scoop LV, Hippo Korean Grill, and Sojo Ramen. And between that blank space
between
right there,
the black Google space,
that's the blank Thai Google restaurant space. That didn't buy 7,300 block of Jones.
Yes.
Okay, there you go. And you were eating shamai in a Thai.
And I had basil
really
chicken.
Thai,
maybe.
That was really nice.
Okay. I also went out for brunch twice this weekend. If you get a chance to go to Genting Palace's dim sum Lunar New Year, $88 a head. But well worth every fucking penny of it.
Okay.
Split lobsters, all you can eat.
Yeah.
Of course, shrimp and crab legs constantly being refilled. Sushi, I mean, I think I had like some chutoro there as well. Crazy cuts of sushi. Coming over from Sushinori, they had their sushi chefs in there making the sushi. It was fantastic. Hot dishes, of course, lots of dim sum, lots of Chinese dishes. They had a Peking duck being carved and folded up in front of you. They had a lamb carving station with hunter sauce. I mean, $88, just unreal. So check that out. One more weekend of that. So if you're hearing this
I'm
on Friday, it'll
weekend.
Be Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I think I'm going to hit that on Friday or Saturday. I'm staying at the Resorts World this weekend for a big Super Bowl old guy blowout.
Oh, that's right. You're rich old guys.
Yes.
Yeah. That should be fun. And you can do the strip club too?
Yeah, because we're having entertainment right at El Dorado, is it called?
Yeah, the Mexican place.
Yeah. Sort of awesome. Right across the street.
Yes. Perfect.
I also did Sedell's with my brother. Interesting fact, that giant plate of fish that they bring with the bagels, they don't have that on the menu anymore. Oh. But I was like, fuck that. Do you guys still do the thing? And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll do it. Right?
They okay. Because that was good. That was delicious.
It was great. Massive heapings of two different kinds of salmon, you know, the
cured. Yeah, and then they had the white fish.
The white fish and the tuna.
All the veg to go. Oh,
all that.
Oh, so good.
And yeah, they did that for us. I think it came in around $160, but it was like, how many bagels do you want? They didn't care. They would just keep bringing bagels.
I was going to say, because I saw four, and I thought, well, that's enough accoutrement for about four dozen.
No, they asked us how many they wanted.
They are generous.
Yeah, and I don't know if they would do this for everybody, but, I mean, probably, based on the fact that we bought that, they were like, how many do you want to take home?
Yeah.
So they were so, you know,
very
we,
nice.
Yeah, we had a day with that. Oh, so that was all great.
The news.
Brunches.
Oh, you're not done yet.
No, that's it.
Oh, okay. We're never done here. The news is on the way. We're going to talk about the James Beard nominations. But first, we are here at Southern. We're going to learn about alcohol in all its wonderful forms. This is Food and Loathing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Here you are in Vegas, you're hungry, and the choices are endless, but do you...
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it. Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album. Pop Apologists. Pop Apologists.
Really want to trust the crowd? You can trust Neon Feast. Restaurant recommendations from real food pros sharing where they send friends and family. All that knowledge is just a download away on the Neon Feast app. You want the strip, off strip, downtown, great views, great value? Find smart, informed restaurant recommendations on the Neon Feast app and neonfeast.com.
And joining us right now, one of our hosts for this great afternoon in this very cool location, we have Livio Lara, one of the instructors for the courses that are being taught here at the Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits Academy. And before, you know, we mentioned that we were here at the top of the show, but we didn't get into just what a gorgeous room this is that we're sitting in. And, you know, I've heard the stories about how much money you guys put into this classroom, what is basically the world's coolest, booziest classroom, I think, ever. If my college classrooms were like this, I would have had a way better GPA. Livio, could you explain where we're sitting? Could you describe this to people?
Absolutely. We are in the Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits and Beer Academy of Spirits room, or Academy room, and we have 48 stadium seating. We have 12 more stools at the bar. The room is very ergonomic. It's not just beautiful, but everything we went through in picking where our students would be sitting, what they would be looking at, how the light reflects on what they're drinking, was really, really well thought out. So this is the room where a lot of magic has happened throughout the years.
And this is so, yeah, so there's this great bar, which he described, which is sort of bottom lit. If you've been to like some of the Onyx bars, right? Imagine that, but without the annoying Onyx, right? So
right.
It's just the plain white coming up from the bottom. But all of these rows of stadium seats where the students sit in this classroom are also lit the same way. And this was established when? I remember the grand opening party for this long time ago.
Yeah, 2016, I believe. And 2016 was the grand opening party. And by the way, the lights that you're looking at here, we have different settings, right? Everywhere from nightclub to tasting wine.
So we can check how our Instagram looks when we're in the classroom.
For sure you can. And also you can check what color do you want your wine to be. So yes, 2016 was when we relaunched. This room was already here. It was set up completely differently. And now we have finally set it up to the way we really like it and the way our students really like it.
And I don't
by
know
the way,
you,
just the chair you're sitting on, Al, is I don't know how much money it costs.
But they're comfortable.
I don't think that really matters. But we did actually have somebody sit on it for 6 hours to make sure that it's something you want to sit on for 6 hours.
Wow. Well, then I'm just not leaving. Nothing in my house is quite this comfortable. In fact, do you have a Netflix subscription?
Right.
Can I just chill?
Got those screens there. I need a game, and I'm ready to go.
I can log into HBO. Yeah. We can watch the menu. Life is good.
Yeah, that would be great.
I don't want to be the tacky guy that says how much did this place cost, but I know that you were when it was open, people did talk about that. Mm-hmm. So how much money went into this room?
So I'll tell you what I have heard. I have heard Larry Ruvo tell Francesco, who designed the room, that his budget was $2 million. Actually, I'm sorry, that he had no budget, and he still found a way to exceed it.
Yeah, that sounds like Francesco, too.
But I do believe it was in the $2 million. Now, of course, the actual room was already here, so it was $2 million to outfit it, not to actually build it.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is beautifully outfitted. And for classrooms, you have cameras and you've got various lights and you've got your acoustics are perfect. You've got, you can see everything from everywhere. I mean, it's really an amazing space.
It really is. It really is.
So the goal when you opened this, if I'm recalling, was that you were going to teach people in the industry. Mm-hmm. And this way, you know, obviously Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits represents some amazing brands of beer, wine, I'm not sure beer, but wine, sake, spirits.
And beer.
Okay. And so, I remember being here when a team from a strip restaurant that was a newly opening Japanese restaurant were in here being trained in sake and Japanese whiskeys. Because if they're going to sell the shit, they need to know what the shit is all about so they can speak intelligently.
100%.
So I know that that was the primary goal, was sort of to educate the community on the bartending community on your products that they are then going to be serving in their restaurants. Is that still what you use that primarily for? And it's been closed for a little while, right?
It has. It's been closed for 2.5, almost 3 years. We're excited that finally it's opened up again.
And that was a COVID thing.
That was a COVID thing, 100% COVID thing, yeah. And yes, the purpose is still the same, right? We want to educate our community, the trade. Think about it. It's more necessary now to have it than ever before, simply because most restaurants have new staff members. And so everybody, the restaurants are dealing with a lot of people that were never part of the opening team, never got their original training. And so they're just kind of thrown in and trying to learn as they go. And hopefully the academy is that vessel that will allow you to polish all those missing pieces that you have as you're serving your guests in the restaurant. And so we try to keep it. Obviously, we're going to talk about the science and everything around fermentation, distillation, and production. But my main objective and the main objective of the academy is to make it very hospitality driven. So don't necessarily talk about how the product is made with all of its twists and turns unless the thrill-seeking guest at your table wants that.
Right. And again, I kind of need to paint the picture here. We're looking behind this bar, and like, there's a bottle of Louis XIII back there, right? There's like, this is, and there's what's right below the Louis tray there?
Oh, Grand Marnier 100.
Grand Marnier 100.
Well,
right?
let me just add to that. The bottle of Louis tray actually has a signature of the master distiller.
Oh my God.
Okay. Well, you're going to want to check my bags on the way out there. So I love the education, and I have sat in on some of the classes, and they're really great. Before we get more into when you're offering more classes, though, one of the things that Southern Glazers offers, and I guess other distributors do this, but we're here to talk about you, mm-hmm. is when you have a customer, whether it's a big strip restaurant or a local video poker bar, your experts, people like yourself, will help not only design cocktails for them to have specialty cocktails on their menu, because they're buying your product. You mm-hmm. want to help them sell it, sure. you know? I mean, it's not a selfless gesture, but you'll help them design great-tasting cocktails, so it's not the schmuck who owns the place that's doing that, but also go in and train their staffs, either on location at their place or have them in for classes like this, right?
Absolutely, and it's not past us to even have one-on-ones. So sometimes we will train the staff, we will train them here, we will train them there, but then you have one or two people that are still, you know, every restaurant has different levels of staff members, right, in terms of years of experience. So some of the newer ones, when you train them, maybe they need a little bit more than that. So I'll meet up with them one-on-one, or we'll get on a phone call and on a Sunday afternoon, because you're absolutely right, Al. It's all about educating people on how to use our brands best, and we're really sticklers about that. And we've helped the restaurant many times, even far before that, even at the design stage, right? I design bars all the time. So if you don't know where to put your well versus your dump sink versus your trash bin versus your glass washer, that's all something we provide and we help with.
And then you teach people all the basics, everything from what kind of ice to use in a drink, in a particular drink, to what kind of glass to use in a particular drink, to how to shake it, and all that stuff, right? You're kind of a full service, which makes sense, because the better the cocktails are, the more your product, the more they're going to sell, the more product that they're going to need to put into those drinks.
100%. And to add to that as well, is the story. The story is really important, because realistically, the difference between a really good cocktail and a great cocktail mm-hmm. is the story, because the drink is the same. Mm-hmm. It's everything else around it. And so a legit story about this is where it comes from, this is why we make it this way, this is all those things are very important. And obviously we teach the staff member, you know, not everybody likes that. So just because the Negroni in 1919 was served this way, you also have to be observant. If that's not how they like it, don't insist. Go back and make it the way they like it. But most people actually like to hear the story. And that's a difference between a really good cocktail and just a great one.
I have been having this conversation with so many people in restaurants because I think the same thing that you're saying applies to food, but certainly to cocktails, is the server, whether it's a bartender or a server at a table at a restaurant, needs to, first of all, feel out the customer and see how much of a story they want to hear. But everybody wants some story.
Right.
Because the story is why we're not drinking at home.
Right.
Right. The conversation. Conversations are why we go out.
Mm-hmm.
And unless we just ran out at home. But normally, the conversations are why we go out. And I think that you give somebody a little bit of story and a little bit of an information, then they get to explore that and teach their friends, and they get to feel like a big shot.
100%.
So you can't overwhelm them with too much if they're not going to retain it and not be able to take it back to their friends as well.
100%. They are not just buying food and drinks. They're buying an experience. They're buying status. So sometimes it's even part of how we as a distributor help our retail partners propose our brands properly, is understand what is the consumer looking for.
Mm-hmm.
If they're looking for status, sell them a luxury brand. They're not interested in good old Johnny who grew up on a farm and now makes something in his attic.
Sure.
They're interested in something where you drink this and you own the room.
Yeah.
Mm. On the flip side of that, right, you might have somebody that's totally on the other side of the spectrum, and they're not all about the frills and the thrills.
No, they want Johnny's farm,
they want
basin gin, whatever.
100%. Yeah. Right. And so how do
they
you
feel
do
connected
that
to it?
Right. How do you do that? I always tell our students here, a good server and a good bartender are very nosy people. Got to be a little nosy. read the customer, get in there, you know.
I'll tell you a story, and I'm looking to see your brands to see if I'm going to offend you or whatever with this story. But I do see Jägermeister up there, so I feel a little telling my story. So my wife and I, Jäger was the first thing she would drink shots of, right? And because of that, I switched over from Jack Daniels to drinking Jägermeister so we could do shots.
Good
and
call.
Right, because you want to be on the same level, right? So in the early days, the 80s, my friends in heavy metal bands would go on tour in Europe and they'd come back drinking Jägermeister. This is before the Jäger girls, before any of that. So, of course, we were still drinking it when we moved to Las Vegas. And we would go in, and a lot of really good bartenders and great restaurateurs, because I was in the industry, they'd keep a bottle of Jäger, whether they normally had it or not. Michael Mina always had it in his restaurant for me.
Nice.
And it was cool. But a lot of restaurants I would go into, and this was also around the same time that Tony Shea was convincing everyone they had to drink Fernet.
Yes.
And nobody was drinking Fernet in this fucking town before Tony Shea. I don't care what you all think. Tony did it. Nobody was drinking it, okay? And but Tony was, and he got everybody into it. So then I would go into bars, and every time they'd shame me for drinking the Jägermeister and try to give me Fernet. And I'm like, do you think I don't know what Fernet is? I know what it is. I'm here as a food writer. I know what it is. I'm just ordering the garbage. And you know what? I like it. It's like if I go in and order a Pabst Blue Ribbon, you're not going to try to sell me a craft beer. You know I know what PBR is, right? So, I mean, yeah, that you got to educate people that, right? Like, don't try to talk people out of their garbage drink.
No, absolutely. And you know what? To add to that story, Al, I mean, it sounds weird, and I don't want to get geeky and nerdy here. But Jaeger is, I mean, I'm an Amaro lover, specialist. You know, Amaro is my thing, right? And Jaeger is a German Amaro called a Krautenlikör. It's actually made better than most Amari. And as an Italian guy, that hurts my feelings. But it's 56 herbs and spices. And after that, they age it for 3 years. Jaeger, by every stretch of the imagination, is craft and awesome. It's just that we turned it into a party drink, and now it's like associated with something that's not supposed to be good, but it's damn good. So yeah, I like that.
So
I can't quite get to the damn good part, but I do know what you're talking about.
I had damn good times on it. I'll tell you that. I did some things, man. I could tell some stories. But okay, so I took you down that little rabbit hole. I apologize. But let's talk now. You're bringing the classes back. Are they in session now? How frequently are you going to have them? Let's talk a bit about that and how much they cost.
Right, right. So February 8th is the beginning of our first Academy of Spirits. It will be 12 weeks. And the next session will be in October. But in October, we're doing it a little different. We're the curriculum is still the same, which we can talk about. But instead of having people come for 12 weeks, 3 hours a day every Wednesday, we're going to do something where we're going to sequester them for 5 days of their life. And for 8 hours a day with breaks, we're going to get them to knock it all out in 5 days.
Wow.
That helps some of our other partners, right? Because Southern is not just Southern Las Vegas, right? And so if a lot of our academies throughout the country have not yet reopened, and so if there's somebody from our Florida market or, you know, Chicago market or in Cali that wants to come in, they can come in, take the 5 days, get it all done, and move forward.
So everything that you offer is a 5 day course, or do you offer single day?
Currently, it's 3 hours every Wednesday.
Okay,
right?
3 hours
for 12,
every Wednesday.
For 12 weeks.
Sorry.
Then we're going to take those 12 weeks and turn them into 5 days in October.
Okay.
And we're going to just see which one the market, because we've always had this issue where some people just could not commit to 12 Wednesdays off. They can make 5 of the 12 or 6 of the 12. Well, that's not going to be, that's not going to cut it.
Right.
So how about you take 5 days off from work or whatever, and you come on over and you learn it and you knock it all out. We'd be happy to do that. So we're testing that out. From now until June, our academy classes, of course, are completely free, which is, again, part of our outreach to the community. Hey, we're all back. We're happy we're back. We all want to get back to work, and we all want to serve, and we all want to drink great cocktails and great wine and awesome beers, and we want to eat great food. So let's roll up our sleeves and get this going.
So just so I understand the logistics, because I'm trying to keep this
I'm listening.
So February 8th is the first Wednesday of a 12-week course.
Correct.
That course covers what topics?
All the spirits.
All the spirits.
All the spirits. Cocktails, mixology, hospitality, food pairing with spirits. And I want to make sure I'm not missing anything. And obviously, the word mixology, right, encompasses so many moving parts.
Yeah.
Whether that's understanding the history of the cocktail versus understanding how to make it for your guests versus all those things. And again, day one of class, I put up a board and I ask everybody, what are you expecting from this course for the next 12 weeks? And so there will be some added elements that just come from the people in the room, because we don't always know what is the soft point of everybody in the room, so we add to that whatever it might be. How to swagger your cocktail, to how to be diehard classic, to understanding which one, when occasion you should be doing one or the other, or something in between.
Okay, so that course starts on February 8th. I'm assuming people need to sign up for that in advance.
Correct.
It is free.
Correct.
Where do they go to sign up for it? And I know you're gearing this towards industry professionals, but like, if I wanted to take it, or if one of my friends wanted to take it, they could come in and do this class?
Well, I'm not checking your... I'll check if you're 21.
Okay. Not looking for my USBG card or anything on the way in.
Your USBG card or your place of employment. So I believe that if you are interested in coming into the academy, then you are either a damn good consumer of ours, which why wouldn't we want to educate you? But more than that, you're probably wanting to go be in the industry.
Yeah.
And so why not help you out?
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. So how do we sign up for this?
SGWSacademy.com.
Cool. So what courses do you teach specifically?
I teach the Academy of Spirits and Fine Service. So those are the 12, that's the 12-week academy. It dates back to, believe it or not, November of 2000. That was when we hosted our first academy, and it's basically been the same core curriculum, all about spirits and cocktails and hospitality. And then I also do once a quarter a Spirits 101. I also do a Spirits 201. Those are more, they're set on a schedule, but as our customers need those, we just do them on the fly, right? So we have some set so that we can point people to going to those. But if a new account is opening, like you said earlier, Al, and they need it on May 13th.
Yeah, they've got people wet behind the ears. It's time to get them ready.
We'll get them going. And then obviously Joseph Phillips teaches our Wine Academy. Eric Mummert teaches our Beer Academy. Joseph also teaches our Sake Academy. So we're going full book here.
Okay, so I want to do this. We're a little pressed for time, but I want to do kind of lightning round. You're the spirits guy, and I see Eric over there, so I'm going to ask him some beer questions in a second. But let's talk really quickly. Spirits. You have any spirits questions that you've always wanted to ask a pro, Gemini?
Oh, my gosh. Skip me. I'll come back.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Something a vodka? I know what makes things just about every other spirit. Uh-huh. What makes something a vodka?
Well, something is a vodka when it is distilled in a way where about 95% of it is alcohol and only 5% of it is water. And what that means is when you're making alcohol, you basically go through a process called fermentation. It creates an alcoholic mash that's about 10 to 12 ABV, which means the rest of it, 80%+ is water. Now you throw it in a still, and when you distill it to very high alcohol content. You have stripped it of the flavors that originally made that beverage what it could have been. Meaning, if you made it with grapes, had you not distilled it that much, it could have become a brandy, right? Had you distilled sugarcane or the fermented mash of the fermented molasses, or had you distilled molasses, that could have been a rum. But because you hit 90+, right? It's 90 in America, 95 in Europe. So it depends on where the bottle of vodka is made. But because you distilled it over 90%, it's no longer allowed to be a brandy. Therefore, it's a vodka.
Okay, that's my question.
Yeah.
So I know that whiskeys are usually rye, corn, things like that. So keeping with the vodka question, can it be made from anything? Because my idea is that vodka just basically is so stripped down, it's a neutral spirit. You want that percentage that you just talked about. Mm-hmm. But can you still make it from anything?
Yeah, I can make it with your t-shirt. If there's enough starch in your t-shirt that can be converted into sugar, then yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, vodka can be made from carrots, potatoes, any cereal grain mash, anything you want.
Okay.
Now, taking that vodka, we turn into a whole bunch of aromatics and herbs and things and steep it in that, and we most commonly make gin.
We redistill it, right.
That stuff.
Right. And we're not... It's simplifying to say we're redistilling the vodka, but yes, for the people listening out there, we're basically taking what is very similar to vodka, neutral grain spirit. We're steeping the botanicals, which are juniper.
Botanicals, that's the phrase. That
juniper berry, lemon, peel, any of those, and we're redistilling it one more time.
So do a lot of other spirits begin with something that could have been become a vodka?
100%. Okay. A lot of, especially liqueurs out there, right? Mm-hmm. Liqueurs are typically neutral grain / vodka based or brandy based.
Now, back to the gin being the most common one. Being a Scandinavian, I have had the pleasure of having a little aquavit once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot, for the life of me, find it in this valley. Do you have some?
Oh, gosh.
And can he take it home with him?
We have a brand called Krogstad aquavit here. So I'm going to look for the bottle upstairs before you leave. And if I have it, it's all yours.
Oh, yes.
I just wanted to know where I could buy it.
Sometimes it's easier for me to tell you where I have it than where you could find it.
Yeah.
Okay, now you got
to I got to take it to Boulder City for the Lutefisk Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And now I got an aquavit question. Isn't there something about it having to be sailed past the equator to get some kind of certification on aquavit? I don't know. I'm digging deep into my old...
Being a Scandinavian thing, I would think more would be like the Arctic Circle or something.
I thought there was... I don't know. I had a friend who lived in Norway who...
That's a new one for me.
Okay. I could be wrong. I was drinking a lot when he told me that. So
I have whiskey that has been aged in barrels that have been out on the ocean.
Yeah, they do that. Yeah.
The last question then on that is, what are some other things of that nature? Aromatics in vodka turned into gin, turned into aquavit? Whatever.
Right, Geneva, right, which was the original gin, which some people like to say is a style of gin, but Geneva was way different than gin, right? Geneva was all about, and by the way, if you haven't tried Geneva lately, you should go grab yourself
like Bulls Geneva,
right? Yeah,
any buy of those. On the shelf,
buy on the shelf, because Geneva was the Dutch had really good grains, right, and so they didn't need to dress it up too much with the juniper berry and the other ingredients. It was more like a really good spirit with a little bit of flavor. When Geneva / gin made its way to London, it was the opposite. Their problem was is their grains weren't as good, and so they flavored it up a little more. So if you want to be in that scenario of redistilled flavored spirits, I think Geneva is 100% your starting point.
And now, did the British actually give gin to their troops so that they would be able to drink their quinine or whatever?
Back in the day...
gin and tonic, baby, the original.
No, so back in the day, right, and when the British and the Dutch were fighting the war together, the British realized that the Dutch were very courageous, and they were drinking this Geneva stuff. And so the British didn't even know what it was. They called it Dutch courage. What's that Dutch courage? And that's how they then brought it home. And the story of the gin and tonic on the
malaria
on the ships, that was related a lot to.
Are these the kind of fun questions that we could ask if we came to your class?
Yeah, absolutely. And guests love those.
I love the nerdy stuff.
One last question.
One last before Eric comes in.
Is wormwood for absinthe and all of that? If you can condense that story, is that stuff still illegal? I was just in New Orleans, and then I was just in Mexico, and I'm hearing so many different things about what people are serving.
Yeah, it wasn't really wormwood. It was an ingredient inside of the wormwood called toujone that supposedly was hallucinogenic. Now, absinthe was a victim of what the wine world in France did. So absinthe was so popular, it was so cool, and all the celebrities were drinking it, and the wine people just got very jealous and boycotted it and invented the whole story. There's
nothing to it.
No real green fairy.
See, I love my wine, but there's something great about the sugar cube and the
absolutely.
Thing,
such a great ritual.
Yeah, you put the bottle up here and you twist the knob. Yes.
Although I am a little disappointed on how it all turned out, right? Because absinthe was illegal up until, I want to say, 2013.
I was going to say, it's 14. Fairly recent, all things considered.
And everybody was stomping their hand on their desk. I want absinthe. I want absinthe. I want absinthe. Now that it's legal...
Nobody's
drinking. Mouthwash.
Okay, we got to get some of the other pros in here because we got everybody in here. So next up, we have Eric Mummert. Mummert? Am I pronouncing it right? Okay. You are the beer expert here?
Will be. We're starting the curriculum beginning second half of the year, most likely.
So okay.
Maybe earlier if we get it organized. But,
so what do the beer classes entail?
Well, the beer class will be the same as, it'll be the essentially the same as the wine and liquor classes. It'll talk about history of beer, beer making methods, styles of beer, origins of beer, pairings with food, hopefully.
Absolutely.
At some point, because that is one of the, I think, underrecognized, although more and more restaurants are doing that with mixed pairings. They do wine, sake, beer. As Belgians will tell you, beer is a great pairing for a lot of different things. So it's something that I think has been underutilized in this country for those purposes. So yeah, that too as well.
So for somebody who's a big craft beer fan,
yeah.
But they don't really know anything at all about what to pair it with, right?
They're the
annoying craft beer guy that tells you everything about it, right? But they don't know what to pair it with when they're at home. Are there any basic rules of thumb that you should apply?
Well, it's sort of like the same with wine. You typically want to pair something that has that complements a dish rather than competes with it. So if you've got a pungent IPA, you probably want to pair that with something that's a little more flavorful as well, so it doesn't overwhelm it. That being said, a simple lager would be pairing something like a strong cheese, something like that. It just really goes to complement the dish rather than taking it over, or vice versa. So,
you guys, we got two beer bigger beer fans than I've ever been. I've always been more of a spirits person myself.
Yep.
So, do you guys have any questions for the pro, the expert?
Are you ever bringing back Olympia?
I lived in Seattle for 7 years, so
Olympia,
I know that.
Heidelberg,
yeah.
Rainier,
yeah.
Blitz Weinhard, yeah.
Yeah, well, they just used to call it Runyer up in Seattle. It's a joke. But Ole is gone, unfortunately.
They're all gone.
That for the many kitchen staff up in Seattle, they're sad about that.
That was the means to an end in college, baby.
I know for me as a beer drinker, I tend to like the big hoppy stuff, the bitter stuff. Long before the hipsters took over IPAs, because I like those bigger flavors.
Right.
But I did find that they were, sort of taking over some of the food and drink that you're going, 100%. Especially if you're getting, a great slice somewhere downtown.
Right.
IPA is going to just kill all of that.
Yeah.
So one of the things I don't understand very much of is the differences between a lager, a Mexican lager. Like, there's some slight differences between how they get these flavors in.
Right.
What are some of those, for those of us who are sort of now learning what it's like to drink a lighter, not light beer, but like a lighter flavor beer?
Yeah, you bring up a great point, because I started drinking craft beer before craft beer was a thing.
Right.
I was in college in the late 80s, early 90s. That's how old I am. in Ann Arbor, and Larry Bell's Brewing. Bell's Brewing was just down the road in Kalamazoo. So I used to go to the Village Corner. I had some extra money because my father paid tuition, but I had all beer.
Absolutely.
And pizza money was my
Yours.
Responsibility. So I worked, and the reason I'm in this business is I worked at Zingerman's in Ann Arbor, which was originally just a deli, but now it's become quite the food empire.
And the sister to Saginaw's. And the
there you go.
Yeah, and Paul actually owns a deli here in Vegas. So I worked with Ari and Paul. And
give us a name. Where are we going?
God, I forget the name.
Nope.
I just saw it the other day.
Sorry, Paul.
But sorry, Paul. I'll plug you when
you
I get
other
my
than
internet in front of me.
Circus, he has an off-strip place?
No, I think that's the one.
Okay,
Saginaw's.
Yeah,
yeah,
yes.
So that's the one in the circuit. So yeah, so I haven't actually gone to see him because apparently he's there quite a bit, but he wouldn't remember me anyway. It was 40 years ago, 35 years ago. But so that's what really launched me into this business.
Yeah.
I was a finance and then tech guy. I was a .com refugee, first .com era, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my career. My wife got a job up in Seattle. We moved up there, and I joined the wine business. I have a lot of wine certification, but craft beer is where I really started into this path, where I am now. So, Sierra Nevada Pale, obviously, was the benchmark.
I'm from
still
Northern
is.
California. That was, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up, lived in the city for 12 years. I grew up in Palo Alto.
There
so,
you go.
Northern California, my first Anchor's team was with my dad.
Yes.
In a 49ers game when I was 15. He had a very European view of alcohol.
Yep.
One of the things that's unhealthy about this country is, well, healthier now, but back then it was about getting drunk.
Yeah.
Less so of that now. I think the younger generation is very, very pointing in that regard. They're very much more mature than we were in that regard. They're drinking better than we were. They're drinking less than we are, but they're drinking better quality.
Exactly.
So, I started off on those same sort of path, the hoppy beers, et cetera. I lived in Santa Rosa for 10 years, and Vinny and Natalie owned Russian River. I was there all the time. But the great thing about Vinny is that he makes every spectrum of beer. And one of the things that a lot of the breweries, they went heavily into the, hey, let's get more IBUs in beers as much as we can. Let's hop on the sucker, da 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 da. And they went away from balance to just let's, you know,
yeah,
how
exactly.
much we can punch you in the mouth with hops. But I think that trend has changed. We're seeing even the local breweries, which we carry here at Southern Wine and Spirits. We're one of the few states, by the way, where Southern actually carries beer. And we carry the whole spectrum. We've got Victory Brewing, Sierra Nevada, Lagunitas. We also have Big Dog and Craft House in our book. And then we have Modelo Especial,
yeah.
The Constellation Beer Portfolio. So we've got every spectrum. But when you say like different styles of lagers, that's definitely true. And a lot of it has to do with, well, in Germany, obviously, you have the very traditional.
Sure.
Rheinheitsgebot, et cetera. This is what can go in the certain beers. In Belgium, it's a lot less strict for their beers. And they obviously produce not so much lager, but definitely a lot of doubles, triples. And then here in this country, we kind of went towards the adjunct lagers, the fizzy yellow that was ubiquitous throughout the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Post-Prohibition, all the breweries shut down. There was really two legacy breweries from before that time, Yingling and Anchor, that really stayed true to, didn't stop production at any one point. But the Mexican lagers are typically based on Viennese lager. So it's slightly darker, slightly more, although they're mostly adjuncts too, whereas most Viennese lagers will still be of the traditional German variety. But they tend to be a little bit darker in color, a little bit richer, but a lot of them also are adjunct and very pale, like Modelo Especial.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about U.S. breweries is that we've gone all over the map. And, there's all different styles from very, very crisp, like Russian Rivers, for example. Their STS Pilsner is super hoppy, but not American hoppy.
Yeah.
That's
a good way to put it, actually.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the grapefruit and the what we get from Cascade hops.
Yeah.
But it's certainly much more crisp, pungent than some of the other lagers you get where the
boring. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, there's that. But I think that lagers were, because everybody's looking for the big flavors in beer.
Yeah.
And the American style, the West Coast IPA, which really is kind of the only indigenous style to the United States, at least as far as recognized around the world. Lagers were kind of an afterthought, especially since people, that's all they could get for a long time in this country. If you were getting a domestic producer, you're getting nothing but plain, boring lager. And now there's so many different styles of different breweries that they're, some of their hoppier, some of the traditional, the Helles lager, which is a slightly different from a Bavarian lager or a Czech Pils. And there's all different kinds of styles, and they all represent a different group. But traditionally, styles have always, everybody thinks that pale lager came from Germany. It's actually not true. Pale lagers actually came from the Czech Republic in Pilsen. Because Munich has hard water and there's a lot of minerals in hard water, it's much more better match for stronger beers, like as far as flavors, like IPAs would be an example.
Yep.
The softer water they had in the Czech Republic, or Czechia as they call it now, they changed the name again, was the original pale Pilsner lager. Because they have softer water there.
Yeah.
So this is before you could do treatment, where you can treat water now anywhere and make a style you want.
Sure.
Just having a water softener. But so that's, that's where the original pale lager came from. And it's just from the water types in different parts of Europe, and then extending over here for the same reason. Before there was, ubiquitous water treatment, that's, you basically made the style that matched the water.
Matched the water.
The
cool.
Yeah.
Wow. And that is what we learned in 10 minutes. Imagine what you learn in a 12-week course.
Right? Exactly. I was just thinking, gosh, these academy classes are going to be awesome.
Wow. Thanks so much, Eric. I appreciate it. We do want to talk to Shayna really quickly.
Yeah,
and
sure.
So, yes. But, man, I just can't wait to learn more from you.
Yeah, and I'm learning myself, too. I'm taking more certifications eventually to become advanced Cicerone, which actually has fewer members than the Master Somm
community. Yeah, it does. Mm.
So looking forward to that as well.
And now the boss, I guess, the director of events and marketing here at Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits, Shayna Graham. Shayna, so this is your idea to reinstitute these courses and to make them free for the first however many months?
Yeah, I think it's Southern Wine and Spirits as a whole's idea, just to get back out there in the community and in the hospitality industry and really relaunch this the right way and do what we did before, the pandemic came along.
Cool. So what other events, by the way, while we have you here and you're the director of events, because I know Southern Glazers is always out there in the community, always doing things. Anything cool else? Anything else cool coming up that we need to know about?
Absolutely. We have our big event that we do every year, UNL Vino. Gives back 100% of the proceeds back to the hospitality college at UNLV. We're super excited. We started 2 years ago kind of revamping it. We're doing our Bon Vivant dinner series. I think you've been to one before.
I have, yeah. I was at one that Vincent did over at Mon Ami Gabi.
Yes.
Which was really cool.
Yes.
And then you did another one that conflicted with an event I was throwing. So I didn't get to go to your Al Solito Posto thing.
Yes.
That, I was doing my own Meet the Chef.
That was a great experience. But lucky for you, we have another one coming up in February with Tal Ronan at Crossroads, the legendary vegan chef. We're super excited. We have Gerard Bertrand Winery paired up with their biodynamic wines. It's going to be an amazing four-course dinner. Tal's going to be there introducing everybody and talking about each course. We'd love to have you guys come out.
That'd be amazing. Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Wow. Sounds great. Well, yeah, thanks for having us in here just to see this and to speak to your instructors. We definitely have to run because I let this go over because I'm having so much fun. But anything else we need to know about this series?
No, just that we're really excited to bring this back to the hospitality industry. And if they're interested in signing up at classes, they can go to sgwsacademy.com or they can send an email to lasvegasevents@sgws.com.
That sounds fantastic.
What about UNL Vino events?
UNL Vino, you can get all of the events coming up at unlvino.com.
Perfect.
Well, thank you so much for having us. The news is next. This is Food and Loathing. It's time for the news, and to kick things off, as we record this episode, the James Beard Foundation has just announced the semifinalists for their 2023 Chef and Restaurant Awards, and I'm excited to report that Garagiste has been nominated for Outstanding Bar, and in the Best Chef Southwest category, the nominees, oh, by the way, that category is Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, and Oklahoma. We have four local restaurants and their chefs represented. We have Oscar and Francesco from Anima, by EDO. Of course, we all love that joint. Chef Karu Azuichi, sorry if I got that wrong, from Kaiseki Yuzu. Yip Chung of Red Plate and Jimmy Lee of Shanghai Taste.
Yes.
So congrats to all of them on being on the long list.
Oh my gosh.
Let's hope some of them make it onto the short list and one of them makes it home with that award. I don't know. It's a medal that you wear.
Yeah, it's like it's like Olympic awards. They walk out with a medal from the photos I've seen. Yeah.
So let's hope one of them gets that. The finalists will be announced on Wednesday, March 29th, and the winner's gala will be Monday, June 5th in Chicago.
Ooh, my birthday weekend. Might have to go see what's going
on. Yeah.
You know, there's a pair of events to announce at Soul Belly Barbecue. That's downtown. First owner Bruce Kalman is having a barbecue class on February 13. It's actually more of a seminar than a class, running from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. The cost is $300 per person. More affordable and more imminent will be a collaborative dinner with Bruce's fellow Top Chef alumnus John Tassar. They'll join forces on January 30th for a whiskey and beer pairing dinner featuring Garrison Brothers and Shinerbach. Ooh. Al spoke to Bruce about that one.
Shiner Beer and Garrison Brothers approached me about doing a tasting dinner, like a course dinner paired with probably basically a beer and a shot, you know, per course. And then we'll do a welcome cocktail. And so initially I was like, I want to bring in a chef that I know from Texas. I brought in a lot of barbecue guys here, but I wanted to bring a chef in. And John Tassar is one of the best out there, in my opinion. And, you know, he and I have cooked a lot together. He was on Top Chef a couple times as well. And he's now got restaurants all over the place. I mean, Florida, Texas, California. I'm surprised he's not open in Vegas yet. And, you know, we cook well together. So I thought it would be a really good pair. And then bringing my chef, Marissa, in to do the dessert. She was actually a pastry chef for Chris Cosentino at Coxcomb. So she actually has a pretty extensive pastry background.
What should somebody expect when they come in that night?
Meat heavy. You know, we are still cooking barbecue. It's just sort of bougie barbecue. I'm still sorting out my dish. John is doing a dish with beef cheeks and polenta. Marissa's still working on the dessert course. But, you know, the overall experience will be you walk in and we will have a little cocktail hour where we have a signature cocktail. It's probably going to be a cocktail sort of like a beer cocktail with Shiner and Garrison Brothers in the drink, which I thought would be very cool. And then and we'll have some little bites during that time, and then we'll sit down, and we are going to make a queso dip with Shinerbach with some chicharrones and tortilla chips and maybe some carrot sticks in case somebody wants to feel like they're being a little healthy. And then we're going to kick off a three-course meal that's going to blow people away.
Tickets for that one are $75, and you can get them through Eventbrite or the Soul Belly website.
RPM Italian, owned by celebrity couple Giuliana and Bill Rancic, has introduced a new sommelier experience. It's a five-course dinner held inside the sommelier station. Al spoke to the wine director, Allison Curatolo.
So this is a chef's tasting menu, a somm tasting menu, if you will. It's five courses that are paired and a collaboration between our chef team and our sommelier team each evening. The menu does change a little bit to allow for kind of seasonal changes, and the wines change almost nightly. So it's something that if there's a bottle that's showing that we're really excited about that we want to pair with our meal, or if there's a wine that wines on our list that maybe aren't getting as much love as we want, mm-hmm. and to be able to pour for the tables. It's fun for us that we get to choose the wines every night, and it is entirely performed and executed by a sommelier. And so you have a dedicated sommelier that's taking care of you for the evening, and you're in, as you alluded to, this is our working sommelier station, and so you're a part of our wine service for the night. As we're decanting bottles for the rest of the restaurant, as we're assessing wine, you're right in the middle of the action while also enjoying a beautiful meal.
So how much do I need to know about wine to come in here? Are you making the choices, or do I need to look over an Italian wine list, which if I don't know a lot about wine in general, I certainly don't know anything about Italian wine. So, you know, I'm a little afraid when I come into a restaurant like this to order wine off a wine list. Is that going to be a setback for somebody like me?
Absolutely not. We take care of all of the pairings ahead of time. We are gearing them to be paired with our meal every evening. And so as the menu items change, we're changing the wines as well. You don't have to do anything besides sit back and enjoy and watch not only the rest of the experience, but enjoy the wines as we put them forward. If you want to talk more about the wines, if you want to order more, of course we can do that. We have our whole arsenal of wines and our whole beautiful wine list available. But for this experience, I do pair the wines and put them together ahead of time. So there's no barrier to entry. You don't have to know anything besides just ready to come in, have a good time.
Cool. I see that you have two price points on this. Mm-hmm. So could you explain the difference between the two?
Absolutely. So right now we have $165 per person for our five-course paired menu. That includes the price of wines. If you would like to do an elevated pairing, we have a Reserva option for an extra $65 per person.
So what nights is this available? What times is it available? Is it an open booking? And then how do I book it?
This is available Tuesday through Friday, and we have an early booking and a later booking, 5:30 and then 8 p.m. It is bookable on OpenTable, and it is a prepaid experience. And so you do prepay ahead of time, get that all out of the way, just so you can come in and enjoy as you're sitting down.
And that is it for this week. Big thanks to our hosts here at Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits and all of their pros for teaching us a little bit and answering our trivia questions. Also, thanks to our guests, Bruce Coleman and Allison Curatolo.
And close the circle on the talk about aquavit. Yes, I've got Krogstad aquavit distilled from grain.
I'm so excited,
a traditional
for you.
Caraway and star anise spirit. I am a happy broadcaster.
Oh, he's going home happy.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Tell a friend about Food and Loathing before you have the aquavit, because you won't be able to afterwards. It's available to the usual podcast places. Check Al's musings and postings at the major social sites. Just search Food and Loathing. And reach us direct by email, info@foodandloathing.vegas.
And if you haven't done it yet, download the Neon Feast app and use it to find your next dining destination. Whatever you need or whatever you want, you will find it on the Neon Feast app or over at neonfeast.com. If you want to see me on TV, you can get in right now. Catch me at Wake Up on the CW every other Wednesday around 8:10 a.m. We may be moving that day, and I may be doing it every week sometime pretty soon.
Ooh.
But I'll let you know more about that. But first, Gemini, where can they find you?
Oh, you can find me on all the socials or wishboneandvine.com. It's all the same username.
Also catch Al all week long on the Neon Feast update on the Vibe. 99.7 in Vegas, 98.1 in the high desert, 98.9 down on the lovely Colorado River at Laughlin Bullhead City. and every Thursday morning around 8:10 at the club, AM 670 KMZQ.
With Samantha Gemini Stevens and Rich Johnson, I'm Al Mancini. Stay hungry.